and welcome to That's a Thing, a sometimes belated, already outdated guide to your teens, tweens, and everything under 20. I'm Elizabeth.
And I'm her mom, Karen.
And are we powered by somebody?
That's a Thing is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, powered by ATB.
Woo!
And you'll hear more about that later in the show.
And today we're talking about video games, but hold your stereotypical gamer rage for just a minute, because for the first and hopefully last time, we're introducing a new segment, Paul Watch.
No! Really?
Yeah, that's okay. Right. Paul Watch, where Mom and I watch Jake and Logan Paul for you with my mouth and her ears.
Wow. Except, and not my eyes, right?
No.
Okay.
No, I won't subject you to the sheer level of whiteness that is these two people. I'm not trying to be, like, a thing here, but they are extremely, extremely visually white.
Okay.
Now, last time we talked about Logan Paul was when he filmed a real dead body and uploaded the video to YouTube. And people were kind of mad about it.
Kinda.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Like, kind of mad where you leave your YouTube channel for about a month and still manage to gain close to a million subs off of it and then go back to daily vlogging.
Really? Like, his video channel earned another million subscribers during
More
that
or less, yeah. People are saying a million. Really, he had like 300,000 subscribers above the number that was shown. So it wasn't a million, but it was close.
300,000 is not close to a million, but it's
no,
a lot.
No, no, no. That's not how many he gained. That's how many he had, which helped him jump forward.
Okay,
so
okay.
He didn't gain quite as many as people are saying.
Right.
So just wanted to point that out because we're all about facts here at the Teenager Speculates about why her society is odd and terrible show.
Yes.
Okay. So now that you're all caught up, you might want to leave because there's some very mild animal cruelty coming up.
Oh, no.
Yeah, but it's not too horrible. In a video titled "The Polls Respond to the CSI Fight," called out in asterisks, I don't know what that means, and watching the video was not helpful. So I assume you have to be really, really into Paul lore to understand it. Logan Paul takes a sick fish out of an outdoor pond and pretends to perform CPR on it. Yeah. And then later on in the same video, Mr. Paul encounters two dead rats on his doorstep and tases the corpses.
He has a taser?
Yeah, he has a taser, and he uses the taser on the dead rats. I don't understand. It's distasteful and unfunny, but the worst thing about it is that it happened after the whole dead body fiasco, because people are saying, well, this proves he hasn't changed, because it's not respectful for a dead body, even though the dead body is an animal that people kill regularly anyway.
Right.
But the whole Suicide Forest fiasco is so associated with his brand now that it's hard to not think about it.
It would have been better to stay away from anything dead.
Very far away.
Very far away.
Extremely far
Choose
away.
Choose a different shtick. Yeah.
Yeah. PETA was mad about it. PETA is mad about everything.
Yeah.
So that's not shocking, but it is what got it a lot more attention. And this is what got his ad revenue suspended.
This one, not the forest.
No, YouTube said it's because of a worrying pattern of behavior. So this is what actually got his ad revenue taken away.
Huh.
Yeah. And people are not too happy about the fact that his ad revenue got taken away on YouTube. Some people, because they don't feel like it's going to hurt him so much because he's such a big channel.
Uh-huh.
And that it just sets a precedent that they can take away ad revenue if they want to.
But they can take away ad revenue if they want to.
And I agree. But Mom and I were talking about this last night. YouTubers, people who create on YouTube, see themselves as employees, a lot of them. And YouTube sees them as users.
Mm-hmm.
So there's just that discrepancy there in how they understand things.
Mm-hmm.
So people who create on YouTube are saying that they're getting a demotion, that their jobs are getting taken away, that their payment is getting taken away. And YouTube is saying, well, we need to control what's on our platform because our real clients are the advertisers.
Yeah.
So it's just a whole mess. And the point is that Logan Paul is still awful, in case you needed an update to make sure that was still true.
Okay, let's talk about something better.
Okay. Do we have a sponsor we could talk about that's better?
Well, I do have some important messages that we could put in here.
Okay.
So,
current sponsor, better than Logan Paul. Shining endorsement.
This episode of That's a Thing is brought to you by ATB, founding sponsor of the Alberta Podcast Network. Guess what, Elizabeth?
What, Mom?
The branch for arts and culture is officially opening in Edmonton at the end of February.
What's that?
That is a clubhouse, an arts venue, a financial institution, all in one. It's for Alberta creatives and cultural workers. It's located on the main floor of the CKUA building in Edmonton. And what it really is a place that understands the unusual circumstances of people who work in the arts and makes sure that their banking needs are met. How does that sound to you?
That sounds cool.
It does sound cool.
Really original and nice.
Mm-hmm. The Branch for Arts and Culture also has a presence in Calgary on Stephen Avenue. It's a beautiful spot. When I go to Calgary, I often make it through past it to admire the beautiful art that is visual or that is visible through the windows as you're looking in. So it's very cool. If people want to learn more about the Branch for Arts and Culture, you can do that at atb.com/thebranch.
Now that you're already nice and angry about the whole Logan Paul thing, let's talk about video games.
Yay.
Mom, what do you know about video games and gamers and what people your age think about them?
Oh, okay. This is a vast topic.
Yes.
I will start with the specific and then go out to the general.
Okay. All right.
So I am of the age where video games could have been a big part of my life, right? Because I'm 48. And so that's like lots of people who are my age grew up with Atari and that kind of thing that I'm forgetting all of the names of the stuff.
Atari, Nintendo, Sega.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
All I know as well. Game Boy.
Yeah. So personally, we never had a console in our house when I was growing up. We had friends who had like Atari, and so I have played Pong before. I have played Pac-Man. Arcades were a thing when I was growing up, which is maybe only a retro thing now.
Yeah, I think it's more of a novelty now.
Yeah. But otherwise, I've never had a video game console in my house until we got a Wii, like about, I don't know, whenever Wii's came out in our, like, since I became a parent, right?
Yeah.
But I know that video games are an important cultural thing and that it's unusual for me to have this much illiteracy about video games.
Yeah. Probably.
And sometimes people blame video games for kids wasting time or being distracted or paying attention to the wrong things.
Mm-hmm. My rebuff to that is we're going to waste our time and be distracted and not do what we're supposed to be doing anyway. And video games are cool.
Okay. I'm not going to disagree with you mostly there.
Okay.
Although, I mean, you always want people, your kids, to do their homework before they do the fun thing, but to what extent do grown-ups do that either?
Yes, Mom, to what extent do grown-ups do that either? So, we're talking about video games, but we're not talking about video games in the Atari, Nintendo, Sega sense. We're talking about indie games.
Which I am an indie kind of gal, so this is exciting.
Yes, yeah. We're talking about small-scale creators. We're talking about people who crowdfund their projects, people who are really making this not just for the money, but because they enjoy it. And I'm sure there are people in major companies, major developing companies, who feel that way, but they also have to get through a bunch of processes. And indie games can focus on innovating and pushing the envelope of what can be considered a game, which is really cool. And a quick disclaimer, I do not play video games because I am not a fun person, according to my mom. According to my mom, I hate fun. I like watching indie games develop. I think it's a super cool art form. If any of the games we talk about seem remotely interesting to you, check them out. Support some small creators. But keep in mind that this is going to be a really light overview. It's going to be a bunch of secondhand information. And I am not somebody who knows 100% what I'm talking about here. this podcast was a mistake. No. I just want to introduce people to this thing that they probably don't know anything about.
Right.
So the first game I want to talk about, which is recent, is called Getting Over It with Bennett Foddy.
Okay, that sounds exciting.
Yes, it's from 2017. It's created by Bennett Foddy. It has a 4.5-star rating on the game distribution site Steam, where I got most of my information from. Do you want to know what it's about?
I do.
Okay, so there's a shirtless man in a barrel.
Okay, that's a good start.
He's using a hammer to attempt to climb over obstacles to get to space. It's a super, super difficult game. The physics are not intuitive. The tagline, quoted by Mr. Bennett Foddy himself, is that the game is a game I made for a certain kind of person. To hurt them.
Okay.
It's a rage game. Do you know what a rage game is?
No, that's a thing?
Yes.
Okay.
A rage game is a game that's intentionally unpleasant and counterintuitive to play.
Wow. People deliberately make those and then people play them on purpose, knowing that that's what they're in for?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. It has a 4.5 star rating.
And do you think that it's ranking high because it's excellent at causing rage or because it's fun?
I haven't played it. Yeah. So I think it's rating high because it does have a genuinely satisfying reward at the end that I will not spoil for people. But it's really cool. It's actually made up of a bunch of assets pulled from other games. So it really is a mishmash of other things, which is fun. And it's been tagged by audiences as psychological horror on Steam. YouTube audiences love it. They love that kind of thing.
Oh, they like watching people play.
Yeah.
It. Okay. Because it drives they like watching someone being driven crazy by how hard a game is.
Yeah, they love watching exaggerated reactions. That's what made people like PewDiePie popular. That's what made people like Markiplier, Jacksepticeye. These are all going over your head.
Yeah, I have heard of PewDiePie, but I haven't
Yay,
heard the other ones.
Mom kind of knows what I'm talking about. These are all channels that built their brand on gaming and the way they reacted to video games rather than their skill at video games.
Right.
And this is the kind of game that gets them a lot of views and therefore gets the game a lot of attention. And I think YouTube is one of the main places where indie games get their publicity because they don't have the budgets for mainstream media advertising. So Hello Neighbor, for example, by Dynamic Pixels and published by Tiny Build in 2017, only got attention because popular YouTubers like the channel Game Theory started talking about it before it was even fully released.
Oh, okay.
Game Theory is a channel I personally watch. It's hosted by a guy who calls himself MatPat, and I can't remember. His name is like Matthew Patrick or something, but MatPat is cuter. I'm going to use MatPat. Like, he's a friend. And he creates theories about the lore of games and whether the physics of the game is possible, that kind of thing. And he found the game, and he started talking about it while it was still in beta, while it was still developing. And the game, when it actually fully came out, got pretty mixed ratings. People didn't love it, but it got way more attention than it would have otherwise because people on YouTube talked about it.
Right.
Which is a really cool form of free advertising. And also, I just really love the art style of this one. There's a mustachioed neighbor with a huge torso, and it's just very fun to look at. And I like the pretty pictures, so I watch playthroughs on YouTube sometimes.
Okay, so this is an interesting thing that I think we've talked about a little bit before, but why do you like watching somebody else play a game but not you play the game yourself?
I think that it's easier, mostly. You get to see the ending of the game without having to play the game and do sections over and over again. And I think a lot of people are attached to the personalities. When I watch playthroughs, I watch playthroughs done by MatPat from Game Theory because he's also trying to figure out the lore of the game as it goes along, and I like that added layer. I'm sure 12-year-olds like to watch PewDiePie scream. I wasn't that kid, there were a lot of that kid. There are 60 million of that kid. So, yeah.
Okay.
Okay. A lot of indie games have received actual critical acclaim and mainstream success, which is really cool. Undertale by Toby Fox, which came out in 2015, marketed itself as an RPG. Do you know what an RPG is?
Role-playing game.
Yay! Mom knows what something is.
Do you know why I know that?
Why do you know that?
Because I have a lot of podcasts that I listen to, local podcasts that I listen to, and in my role as head of the Alberta Podcast Network, where RPGs are discussed on like Northern Nerdcast and Press Start to join.
Woo! Mm-hmm. Do you know anything about Undertale?
No, never heard of it.
The audience can't see this, but I cocked my head to the side as if I couldn't fathom this. Okay, so Undertale puts a lot of emphasis on personal choice and fantasy world building. It takes place in a world where there are humans and monsters, and there's a rift between them. So they exist in kind of different worlds that are attached. And the choice aspect comes in because you can do different kinds of runs or playthroughs. You can do a pacifist run where you don't kill anybody, and you can do a genocide run where you kill everybody who you encounter in the RPG.
I already don't like that part.
But the pacifist run is interesting and kind of a cute gimmick, and it has fun characters and an interesting world. And it impacted MatPat from Game 3 so greatly that when him and a bunch of YouTubers went to visit the Pope, which happened, can we pause to acknowledge that that happened?
Wow, okay.
He gave the Pope a copy of the game.
Really?
Yeah, he gave Pope Francis a copy of Undertale.
I like to think that Pope Francis would appreciate at least the pacifist run.
That was the idea. He's like, we have a choice here, Pope Francis. I'm representing America. Here's my video game. But I'm even scared to look at what the other YouTubers brought in to the Pope during that meeting. So I think he probably has one of the better gifts that came out of that. Yeah. Okay. And the other game that's received critical mainstream acclaim that's indie is a game called Cuphead.
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 Okay.
Cuphead. Do you know anything about Cuphead?
Never heard of it.
How are you a person? No. It came out in 2017 from Studio MDHR, which is Canadian.
Yay.
Canadian. And it's an intricate, hand-drawn shoot-em-up platformer. Do you know what that means?
Is it the same as first-person shooter?
Not quite.
Okay.
It's 2D, and you see your characters, and they shoot the enemy, and they also jump over obstacles at the same time. Kind of like Contra, if you know what Contra is?
Nope.
You were alive during this time.
Okay.
I'm trying to clarify the picture for you. Basically, you have your characters named Cuphead and Mugman, and that's what their heads look like. There's a cup and a mug. That is the idea. And they have to fight various enemies to collect soul contracts because they made a deal with the devil for all the money in the devil's casino. This is a video game, okay? I cannot make this any clearer. Anyway, it's a lot of shooting, but it's so beautifully drawn and intricate the visuals are. And it won awards as the best platformer, the best indie game, the best visuals. It's nominated for a bunch of other categories that are still pending. And it's really cool to see something that came out independently getting mainstream recognition and success, which I like. And check out pictures of this because the hand-drawn 1930s style animation is gorgeous.
Ooh.
Yes, it's so pretty. We'll link to it. We might have to put some pretty pictures in the show notes because it's so beautiful. You may be more aware of indie games than you think. Maybe not you, Mom, listening. Did you hear about Super Meat Boy?
Nope.
Okay, this came out in 2010 and it was huge when it came out. I remember hearing about this when I wasn't seeking out these things, when I literally only watched Annoying Orange and Tobuscus on YouTube,
mm-hmm.
which was a far-off time when I didn't have a sense of humor. Anyway, I'm allowed to say that because I was a devoted fan at one point. Okay, so Super Meat Boy, I need to read you the description for this game.
All right.
Super Meat Boy is a tough-as-nails platformer where you play as an animated cube of meat who's trying to save his girlfriend, who happens to be made of bandages, from an evil fetus in a jar who's wearing a tux.
As one does.
Yes. This is what video games are like. Yeah. It's not sensical, and it's allowed to be nonsensical. Now, another early indie game which I want to talk about, is Slender, the eight pages. You thought I was going to bring up Slenderman in the creepypasta episode? Nope, video games.
Is this part of a long game? Like, did you do that on purpose? Or?
Kind of, yeah.
Really? Wow, yeah. Okay.
Because Slenderman kind of got absorbed into creepypasta, which you can listen all about in our first episode, if that's a thing. Slenderman existed before it was in creepypasta, and it got a lot of its notoriety from the game, The Eight Pages. Just for anybody who doesn't know, Slenderman is a tall, faceless man with tentacles on his back who steals children, and it's an internet-based urban legend. So passe. We all know this now. Anyway. Digital eye roll. Okay. But the idea is that your character, who's in the first person so you can't see them, walks around and they have to collect a bunch of pieces of paper that are related to Slenderman. Well, the AI chases you and pops up around corners, and then you static out and you die and you start over. And this is another game that got really popular as the original jump scared YouTuber Screamfest, is what I like to call it.
Okay.
Which is when a YouTuber pretends to be scared by something not that scary during their Let's Play because the kids like it when the adult looks freaked out.
Does it look obviously fake to you?
It's very polygonal.
What's that mean?
That it's not very well defined, and it's just kind of a weird blob man who doesn't look that scary. Maybe it's scarier when you're actually playing it, but somehow I doubt that.
You know how easily scared I am.
Yes.
I bet I would be
scared. Oh, you would be scared.
I would be an excellent YouTuber video game person
because
I like freak out all the time by surprising
things.
You don't
even need video games. I can walk up behind you and that will be the video.
Okay, well, we'll expand That's a Thing out into that someday.
Okay.
Continue.
Anyway, more things. Why I wanted to talk about Slender, though, really, is because it laid the groundwork for the indie juggernaut that I think our audience needs to hear about. And that is Five Nights at Freddy's.
Five Nights at Freddy's, which I also had not heard of somehow until you asked me, have you heard of Five Nights at Freddy's? And you say that this is pervasive through the culture, and also this is where all of the happiness that we have had about, oh, I love this game and this game and this game, now we're going dark, is that right?
Oh, I love this game so much, and I am fully and acutely aware of its flaws.
Okay. Yeah, tell me more.
This is a horror game, and it's really actually innovative as an indie horror game, and I think it's super cool. I'm gonna set the scene right now. Okay. It's August 2014. The world is calm. Suddenly you hear a scream. It's PewDiePie, wailing like a banshee as a Chuck E. Cheese-style animatronic leaps at him from his computer screen. This is Five Nights at Freddy's, lovingly known as FNAF.
Okay.
Yes. The concept was simple. The player is a nighttime security guard at a haunted pizzeria. During the shift, the animatronic mascots, a fox named Foxy, a chicken named Chica, a rabbit named Bonnie, a bunny named Bonnie, one might say, Eerie, and a bear named Freddy, become sentient and roam the restaurant at night, hunting down the night guard. The player cannot move, has a limited power supply, and must check security cameras and closed doors to keep the haunted animatronics out. Haunted animatronics is a word I've heard more in my life than I ever thought was possible.
Does it count that I'm haunted by birthday parties at Chuck E. Cheese when you were like five that featured a very, very scary animatronic mouse?
Probably. Yes. I don't remember anything about Chuck E. Cheese, honestly. If a player fails to stop the haunted animatronics from getting into the security office, then a jump scare leaps out and the player screams and leaps back. And it's all like, ah, I've been attacked by a jump scare. And then you get the same jump scare seven more times while you try to beat the game.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you like this game.
I do. I do. But it gets repetitive after a while, the first one. But that's not the interesting thing about this game. It's the fact that it's basically a horror movie franchise style series of video games at this point. Another thing you need to know is bits of story, little hints at the plot, are provided by the phone guy through pre-recorded tapes. And all of that's just in the first game. The sequel came out in November 2014, adding new mechanics, hidden minigames, and deepening the plot, which is now about a child killer, dubbed by the fans as Purple Guy.
He kills children?
Yes.
I don't like this part.
So many children.
Yeah, I don't like that part.
How did you think the animatronics got haunted, Mom? Animatronics don't haunt themselves. You have to have a purple serial killer come in and murder two-bit children.
I just really do not understand the horror thing. Like, I really don't. It's so upsetting. Anyway, go on.
Okay. March 2015, Five Nights at Freddy's 3 came out. There's nothing interesting about Five Nights at Freddy's 3 that I can add to what I've already said. July 2015 gave us Five Nights at Freddy's 4, which told the story of either the Bite of 87 or the Bite of 83. Somebody getting their head bitten by a giant robotic bear happens more than once in this story, and you have to figure out which one this game is about.
Okay.
That is the kind of game this is.
Okay.
It's very, very convoluted.
Yeah.
October 2016 gave us Sister Location, which broke from the other games by focusing on a series of minigames with a free roaming feature. It's revolutionary in these games to be allowed to actually move.
Yeah.
That's never happened in a video game before. Oh my God, you can move. I think Sister Location is pretty cool though. And it really expands on the plot in a totally different direction. And if you want to know everything you can about the plot of Five Nights at Freddy's, look at Game Theory. There are like 15 different videos with wildly different ideas about what actually happens in the plot of these games.
Okay.
But I'm just trying to provide the basics here so you understand what the game is about.
Right.
And that brings us to December 2017 with Freddy Fazbear's Pizzeria Simulator. And that game is available for free. You can check it out for free.
I'm not gonna, but okay.
And what I find super interesting about Five Nights at Freddy's is how massive it has become in the popular conscious. Not for you.
No.
But for Walmart, apparently, because it's everywhere in Walmart.
Like on t-shirts and hats and posters and stuff?
Yeah, well, it's on t-shirts. There are two novels. The first novel was on the bestsellers list for 4 months, the New York Times bestsellers. It's not a good book. Like, I've heard people say that it's not a good book, and I have heard passages from it, and it is not a good book.
Hang on. It's really?
Yeah, it was on the bestsellers list.
Really?
Yeah.
We have to link to this, because I have my doubts.
Okay. I might be wrong. I'm pretty sure I'm right.
Wow.
Yeah. Because it was in the young adults category.
Right.
Young adults like child murder, apparently. So,
God.
Not wrong. There have been rumors about a movie that is going to come out, but it keeps getting pushed back to square one because it's in kind of a development hell right now where it's bouncing between Warner Brothers and a different company, and it's a whole thing. But the fact that people are trying to make a movie out of it in the first place is like, whoa.
Yeah. It feels like age inappropriate.
Yeah, and the other thing I wanted to talk about is there's the survival guide, which is just a book about how to play the game, mm-hmm. And that's cool. And then there's the fill-in survival journal.
Okay.
When I was little, as in grade 4 to 6, I used the fill-in journal format where you get a journal that's based off of a piece of media you like and you fill it in with facts about yourself.
Right.
There's one for Five Nights at Freddy's, and I'm pretty sure it's not aimed at people my age and older.
Yeah.
So what are you guys doing? Huh? What audience are you targeting? There's plushes. And a lot of the things that they're selling seem to be aimed at little kids, which is, well, not little kids, but 4 to 6th grader kids.
Right.
Which I think is odd because the only reason they know about the game is because they watch somebody like PewDiePie play it.
Right.
So why is the marketing all going towards kids, and how much do the parents know about what they're buying for their kids?
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I like horror, and I think as long as the parents understand what they're buying and are okay with it, it's super cool that a kid is into horror as long as they don't do anything horrible. Yeah. And don't give themselves nightmares. But if the parent doesn't know and is just buying the Five Nights at Freddy's stuff because they know that their kid wants it without having the full context, I'm not sure that's the most fair thing for the parent. I think they should be able to make a decision about whether or not they want their child to be exposed to that kind of thing because of how sinister the plot gets. But at the same time, it's not an overtly graphic game.
Yeah, I'm of two minds here, because I do think that it is weird that people are buying merch for a thing that's centered on child murder. That seems odd to me. But as this show is progressively revealing to me, I have been stunningly unaware of the media that you've been consuming away from, you know, my parental guidance, right? Yeah. And I feel, part of me feels like she was like 12 or 10 and taking in the stuff that I would find too disturbing at my age.
Yeah. I know that when I went to theater camp in grade 7, people were talking about it a lot, and people were playing the first game on their phones. Somehow, I don't remember how that works. I just remember they were playing it. And I was aware that it was happening, but I didn't look too closely into it.
But not just Five Nights at Freddy's, like all like creepypasta, right? Like there's a lot of stuff in there that is really disturbing. And I feel part of me feels a little bit guilty for not knowing that you were consuming that stuff.
But I think that's one of the reasons why we need the show in the first place, is because don't police your children. Your children are probably fine. But learn what they're talking about. Try to understand what the culture's like these days. Because I think that it's good to know. So if something does come up that you're definitely not comfortable with your children being aware of, you can talk to them about it, not as somebody who's panicky and afraid and doesn't understand, but as somebody who says, I've looked at it, and maybe wait a little bit before you look into this because it might be bad for you at this time. Because kids probably going to be more responsive to that than just that thing's scary, stop looking at it, right? So that's Five Nights at Freddy's, and this was a really light overview of indie games and pop culture. But if you want a more personal recommendation, Josh over at Press Start to Join, who's from what network?
The Alberta Podcast Network, powered by ATB.
Wow, the Alberta Podcast Network, powered by ATB. Super cool. He suggests the game What Remains of Edith Finch, and I looked into it, and it seems super cool. Here's the description according to the website. As Edith, you'll explore the colossal Finch house, searching for stories as she explores her family history and tries to figure out why she's the last one of her family left alive. Each story you find lets you experience the life of a new family member on the day of their death, with stories ranging from the distant past to the present day. And I think that sounds interesting, and if it interests you, check it out. You'll be helping out a smaller developer who's doing what they love.
That's
ad
nice.
Break time.
Okay. We'll take a break and talk about something, and then when we come back, we're going to talk about dating sims.
Yes, we're going to talk about dating sims real quick, because I want to talk about dating sims, and I'm allowed to if I want to.
Okay. As we mentioned at the top of the show, That's a Thing is now a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, powered by ATB. This podcast has recently joined the network, replacing, in a way, my previous podcast, Seen and Heard in Edmonton. And we find ourselves among a number of fantastic Alberta-made podcasts about all kinds of things. You can find them all at albertapodcastnetwork.com. What do you think about being part of the network?
Finally?
Finally. Wait, this is like episode 4. Like,
yes.
Hold your horses there.
But you're a good business owner who doesn't just go with the nepotism and forces me to actually work so that you get good quality podcasts on your network.
That is the attempt here. In other news in the network, we've also started putting on workshops to help people start their own podcasts. So it's called How to Start a Podcast from Notion to Reality. And it's a half-day session to help you refine your idea, figure out the logistics, and sort out the technical issues to get your podcast out of your head and into the ears of the people you want to reach. So we're doing one in Calgary on February 25th and in Edmonton on April 7th. In Calgary, it'll be taught by Meg Wilcox of Mount Royal University with assistance from Kyle Marshall of Media Lab YYC. And in Edmonton, I'll be leading the session with the help of Erica Ensign and Stephen Shapansky of Castria, who help us with the editing of this podcast. The one we did in Edmonton in January was well received, right?
Yeah, I was there manning the door. You might see me again, maybe, fingers crossed. Yeah. Hello. from the future or the past. Shh. The point is, it was super cool, and I got to listen to Mom, and it was really interesting. And it even actually helped me out with the podcast I'm doing with her right now, which
I
like.
There you go. Tickets are only $99 plus GST. You get a planning tool to help you through the process. Learn more at albertapodcastnetwork.com/events. All right, we're back.
We're back. It's almost like we never left. Shh.
Continue.
Yes, we're going to talk about dating sims. And they're in the visual novel format. So I think I should explain what a visual novel is first. Because do you know what a visual novel is, Mom?
Well, I can guess, you know, like it seems like a sort of a story-based game with yes. some interaction in it.
Yeah. If you played the Ace Attorney games in the 90s and early 2000s, then that's a visual novel style game. It's all about talking and it's very cerebral. You're trying to figure out what somebody's lying about or what you can do to manipulate a person, a character within the game. They often have branching storylines. So you get multiple different endings depending on which answers you choose. That kind of thing. And this really suits virtual dating, quote unquote.
Okay.
So can you guess what that is?
Virtual dating? Well, it sounds like you're meeting potential mates and asking them questions or answering questions from them somehow.
Yeah. Well, you meet your virtual anime waifu who's made up and based on a couple of stereotypes. So you'll usually have the peppy one and the sassy one and somebody you knew beforehand and an emo one, that kind of thing.
Right.
And you choose the one you want and you woo her incessantly, or him. There are male ones. You woo her or him. These are usually straight games. Just want to point out there it's a very straight,
heterosexual space.
Yeah. And most of the games that are played are aimed at male gamers with female characters.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And it's a really casual format where you're just trying to get the virtual girlfriend that you want, and then you get the copy and paste ending, but with a different set of still frames bouncing back and forth as your girlfriend than you would otherwise.
Okay.
I don't fully understand this medium, but I also appreciate I'm not the target demographic for it.
Exactly.
But this visual novel dating sim format is also a really great place to create metagames and subvert video games and dating sims. So do you know what any of those words that just came out of my mouth
Yes, mean? I understand subversion and stuff. Yeah, that's what I appreciate about your culture.
Yay. We're so postmodern. Do I know what postmodernism is? Oh no, better hide. Okay, so the first game I want to talk about subverts the trope of heterosexuality, and it's called Dream Daddy.
Okay.
Can you guess what this is about?
No.
Okay. It's created by the Game Grumps, which are a YouTube gaming juggernaut. And would you like to hear the description on Steam for Dream Daddy?
I would.
A dad dating simulator is a game where you play as a dad and your goal is to meet and romance other hot dads. Are you ready? Hi, ready. I'm dad.
So it has a lot of dad jokes in it.
Yes.
Yes.
The twist is that it's all dad jokes.
I love it.
And it's all dads dating dads. There are 7 dateable dads. 7 dateable dads you can date. There's a goth dad, and there's competitive dad who looks distressingly like my dad, like not quite, but kind of. And there's bad dad, Robert Bad Dad Smalls. And it has a bit of a teenage girl fandom, which I think a lot of queer male-based games do.
Hmm.
And I have opinions on that, but I'm going to withhold them because this is already a long episode.
Okay.
and I have so much to say. There are multiple endings per the dad you decide to date. There are dad-based mini games. All the dads have their kids who you can interact with. Your dad has a kid. You can customize your dad, so your dad looks like the kind of dad you want to be. And if I can find a digital version of this, which I won't promise, Mom and I will design us as our dad sonas. And our dad sonas will be available on our Twitter account. That's a thing, yag.
Excellent. I can't wait.
Yes. It's voiced by the Game Grumps, which is a YouTube young person. Draw in. And it, the description says, so many dad puns, like to the point where it made us all uncomfortable. This is great, and we need more games like it, is my thesis here.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Yeah.
I could possibly be persuaded to play this. Possibly. Probably not, though.
We should do a let's play of Dream Daddy. I'm just going to point this out now. No promises, but maybe.
Okay.
Now, here's a game you'll be less thrilled about, question mark?
Mm.
Doki Doki Literature Club. Do you know anything about this?
No. I like literature, though.
Okay. It came out in September 2017 by Team Salvato. It's free to play, so if you want to play it, it's free to play on Steam. You can download it and play it. It's super meta. Super meta. I cannot explain how meta this game is without spoiling it, but it's so meta. It's set up as a cute little dating sim where you join the literature club and you have to woo one of four anime girls who have like three different poses that look uncomfortable and push out their breasts that they rotate through, which is the usual generic dating sim format. And it has a cool poem writing mechanic because you have to woo them with your sweet, sweet poetry.
Okay.
So you have to pick which words resonate with which character. There's Sayori, who's your childhood friend. There's Natsuki, who's this short girl with pink hair who's distressingly young looking because it's an anime chibi style thing.
Uh-huh.
So you're like, I don't want to right now. Thank you. There's Yuri, who's tall and shy and totally emo, honestly. Like, totally emo. Like me inside. And then there's Monica, who's the president of the club. That's her personality. She's mm-hmm. the president of the club.
Mm-hmm.
And you just pick which one you want to woo as your total jerk anime boy without a face self. And here's the description on Steam, just in case you need to be sold on this a little bit more. The literature club is full of cute girls. Will you write your way into their hearts? This game is not suitable for children or those who are easily disturbed.
Oh. That took a turn.
Yes, it did. It is the whole page is covered in disclaimers about this game and how you shouldn't watch it if you're how you shouldn't play it if you're a kid or if you're easily disturbed, like trigger warnings everywhere,
right?
But you never get a clue as to what they're for by looking at the page.
It's
listed as dating sim and visual novel and psychological horror. Those are the three things it's listed as its top tags on Steam, and it's like really, really cool when you get into it. People think that, and this might be confirmed, I'm not sure, that it's a viral marketing thing for Team Salvato's new horror game.
Okay.
Which I think that's a super cool, free, fun way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You can get a bunch of different endings. It invites you to play around with the files of the game itself.
Okay.
So you can go into your computer and look at the files related to the game, and you can delete things and put things in and move things around and see other things getting deleted and changed. And it's just really cool. So if you aren't a child and aren't easily disturbed, check it out because it's free anyway.
Okay. Does the disturbing part involve misogyny or sexual violence?
Not really.
Not really?
No.
That's kind of like not a thing.
Well, like, what I mean by that is it's a dating sim, so it's going to make fun of that, I think. And so usually, so what it does is it takes the man is a jerk.
Okay.
like the idea that the man in the dating sim is probably a jerk, which is like the assumption, because he's trying to woo multiple ladies at the same time in this dating sim.
Right.
They take that and they play it up in the dialogue a bit.
Yeah.
But there's nothing directly connected to that in the game itself. It's not that kind of story.
Okay.
Yeah. So do you have any other thoughts about this? I just think it's a real cool thing that's happening in games right now. That's trending.
Yeah.
And I wanted to clear our palate after Five Nights at Freddy's.
Can I plug my friend's dating sim?
Yes, you can.
Yeah. So Ben Jelena, who I worked with at the Edmonton Journal a very long time ago, he has developed a dating sim called Speed Dating for Ghosts.
Yes.
And it looks amazing. So there's a, as we speak right now, there's a trailer for it on Steam, which looking it up was resulted in my first ever visit to Steam. So that's how.
You're a big girl now.
I'm a big girl now. And I believe that it's supposed to go live on Valentine's Day. And I think it looks like the sort of thing that you would like.
Yeah, I've seen pictures and it looks super cool and the art is super cool. And it definitely fits the category of a dating sim with a bit of a twist,
yeah,
which I like.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's dating sims and we've survived and hopefully we haven't ruined our podcast for you by talking about something that I'm not an expert on. I just want people to know about it because it's cool and it helps people and it gets missed by people of mom's generation probably a little bit more. And just to make sure that you don't have any frustrations to let out at me on the Twitter page, which you're allowed to do, but I do not want to invite. Now we have a reading from the Urban Dictionary.
Oh.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Yes.
Mom, do you know what a thought is?
A thought.
T-H-O-T. Thought.
It's not a misspelling of T-H-O-U-G-H-T or like text speak rather.
No, it is not.
What is a thought?
Okay, this definition is not from Urban Dictionary because I like to avoid that when possible because I don't want to know what a Cleveland steamroller is. Thank you very much. It is enticing, but I will pass. I'm not explaining that to you. Hush. This definition is from Melissa, who's the creator of our wonderful logo, and according to her, an expert at explaining this word to the adults in her life.
Okay.
Thought. That hoe over there. A term to replace slut, often derogatory and rude.
Wow. Have you ever heard someone be called that?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Have you ever been called that?
No.
No.
I don't talk to people.
That's a thing, hey?
Yeah, that's a thing. It's a word that's becoming commonplace. Yeah.
Huh. Well, now we know.
Now we know. So if somebody calls you or someone you know a thought, then you know what they mean.
And they're not a nice person.
No. And cut them out of your life. Leave. No. But just so that you know, because people don't know. And then they're like, oh, that's being said.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Also, I just feel like it's a really sassy acronym.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I suppose it could be used in a sassy way and not a misogynistic way. Yeah.
I think it's used by girls more than men.
Yeah. Well, that's a whole other
thing. My ringette team always. And I'm like, you need to use the Victorian lingo I'm trying to bring back and not this acronym new stuff. If there's something you've heard your kids say or something that your parent has not heard before that you would like them to become aware of without you having to explain it, where can they go to request something for us to explain?
They can find us on Twitter at That's a Thing YEG.
Yep. And they can email us at That's a Thing YEG @gmail.com.
And we'll do our best to answer questions and provide this public service that we've started doing without anyone asking us to do.
This is all altruism. All altruism.
Also, you should, if you've come across this episode in isolation, you should subscribe to That's a Thing in Apple Podcasts and Google Play or Stitcher or other places where pods are caught. And you can find our show notes at, right now, you can find them at thatsathing.libsyn.com. And we're working on getting a proper website where we can put our proper show notes.
Proper website, woo!
Woo! Is that it?
Yeah, I think that's it.
Okay. Thanks, sweetheart.
Bye.